Hey everyone, welcome back to Hysteria Radio. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro, and as always, today we're talking about music, writing, and everything expressive arts and healing in the mental health world. Today I have a guest. His name is Joseph Panola. He's actually the founder of an organization called the You Rock Foundation, which is doing great things for music and mental health right now, bringing awareness to a community, maybe on the rock scene, where some people aren't as comfortable talking about, you know, the things that are going on in their life as they are in other communities. So I want to welcome to the show Joseph Panola.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it. It's an honor and pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on, Joseph. And, you know, I see what you're doing with You Rock Foundation. If you guys want to check it out, it's urockfoundation.org. And I think that there needs to be more of this, you know, all across the board. I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago that 70% of musicians are living or have lived with a mental health condition. And I just think that that number is astounding. And, you know, when you think about all the stresses that are involved in music, you know, you have to be really focused. You have to get up on stage in front of people and put on a performance. And to think that these people are living with things like depression and anxiety and mania, you know, and just social anxieties and stuff like that. It's amazing that some of the people that we would classify as having a mental health condition or mental illness are maybe some of the strongest people out there getting up there and telling their stories. So what better way for you to bring their real life story to the light rather than just the music?
I couldn't have said it any better. And thank you for bringing up that statistic. The You Rock Foundation wants to help anyone out there who is struggling with a mental illness or actually just struggling, period. But given how much of our work is related to music, both as a therapeutic form of self-expression and how connected we are to the industry, not just with the performers themselves, but everyone behind the scenes on production and whatnot, I think it's important for everyone to realize how tough it is for people living that lifestyle, for people who have to pay their bills with that art form.
Yeah. It's, I can't even imagine the stresses. I mean, I'm a, I don't know what they call, I guess like a bedroom or a garage writer. I love to write and play and do stuff on my own. But when it comes to the social aspect of it and the whole getting up on stage thing, I don't think that I have the mindset for that. So, you know, it amazes me that these people can do that with the things that they're living with. What's your personal background with mental health? Are you a clinician? Is it lived experience?
It's all lived experience. I've been living with depression most of my life. And I'm a 2-time suicide attempt survivor. While I'd like to say that that's like all behind me, to this month, June, is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. Last month it was just Mental Health Awareness Month, period. And despite the fear I have of admitting so, I think it's more important than ever to admit that I still struggle with suicidal thoughts. That's not to say I have a plan in place, I have the means to do so. That just means I'm invaded by thoughts beyond my control of wanting to hurt myself. And I think if more people admit that, more people who are willing to discuss it, not necessarily in public like we're doing now, but just discuss it, period.
Yeah.
The less tragedies we'll have to deal with.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And it's funny you say that because a lot of people, I think, in the mental health community and even the families and friends of those of us that are living with something, they almost expect us to go up on stage now and tell our story or to write a blog or or, you know, to do something public. And I think the whole point of us doing a little bit of public work is that so we can open up a conversation at the dinner table, or, you know, when we're hanging out with friends. Like, it's not to put on this public display or this show for everybody. It's to open up a wider conversation. And I think we're on the verge of that, but it's almost become expected of me to go to like the local high school and do a talk, or, you know, to get up on stage at a mental health event and give a talk. And I think the whole point of those talks is to open up a broader conversation. And sometimes that takes a lot longer than just one or two public events, I'm finding.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. It's like this, there's a bit of pressure, like whether it's actually there from the public, from our culture, because of the national discussion that's going on, or really international. But sometimes it can also be made up. Like we're inventing that pressure and putting it on ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's a point, and this isn't really relevant to the conversation, but I think it's worth building on the point you just made as far as openly discussing our struggles in public versus doing it at the dinner table in private. I don't know about you, Joe, but for me, it's easier to do in public. I struggle to talk about what I'm talking about now with you, with my wife. And that, again, that's tough to admit, but it's true. And I think maybe that's due to less daily interaction. So if you had any judgments, I don't think you do, but if you did have any, I wouldn't have to, you know, handle the repercussions of those. Whereas I see my wife like all day. So there's this built-in fear. There's this, I don't know, I'm struggling to accurately describe it right now. And it's, I've just been worn down. I've been worn down for like 20 years by like, this person agreed to marry me, and yet my brain is convincing me she's going to judge you, she's going to shame you, she's going to leave you.
Yeah.
I have no reason to believe that. But yet that voice in my head, the bad wolf, as I call it, you know, is repeating it ad nauseum with an ever increasing volume. And I think that's what the experience is like for a lot of people who deal with depression or deal with mental illness of any kind. And I'm not just going by my personal lived experience, but by the conversations I've had with fans of the UROC Foundation, whether it's online or in person at things like Warped Tour, or from the conversations I experienced as a volunteer crisis counselor for Crisis Text Line. I hear a lot of the same stuff, a lot of different versions of what I described. Like, we're talking about mental illness, we're talking about suicide more than ever before, and yet the stigma doesn't seem any weaker from when I was a teenager. And
it's not only
surprising, it's disheartening.
Yeah, I think within our community, I've noticed a difference. And even on the outside, I notice minor changes. There, since I've gotten up on stage, since I've written books, people are a little, you know, because I think to play, you know, their advocate for a second, maybe they don't know what questions to ask, you know, like, because it's tough. Sometimes you don't want to offend the person that's struggling. You don't want to bring something up that may already be bothering them. So I think there's like this, this conflict right now of like, which questions can they ask? And yeah, it's tough, but I feel the same thing, because when I write, I can write it on paper and I can look at it and say, okay, this is what I meant to say. And then at the end, I could go back to it a couple days later and be like, maybe I didn't want to be, you know, this harsh on this line, and I could change it. But when I speak, sometimes it all just like spills out, and it doesn't spill out the way that I wanted to say it. And I think that's the power of music and writing, is that, you know, there's like an art. It's, I don't know, maybe you can tell me, you're the expert on music, but how did writing and music play a role in your healing process, or help you to get your message across?
So I'll go back to the beginning without giving you and your listeners an autobiography.
We'll go two-part episode if we have to. Don't worry about it.
If I had to pick a starting point, it would be when my dad died in a car accident when I was 16. It was tragic for everyone, anyone who knew him, especially my family, but I think it's safe to say I took it the worst, to the point where within a year I was self-harming, mostly cutting and self-medicating, first with alcohol and then with any drug I could get my hands on. And that eventually led to my first suicide attempt on prom weekend on the year 2000. And it was intended to look like an accidental overdose. And the appeal of that, in my admittedly disintegrating brain, was I'm away from family. I don't have to worry about making this any worse than it has to be by one of them discovering me.
Yeah.
And number two, oh, maybe it wasn't a suicide. He just, you know, he partied too hard, kind of thing. And it took 16 years for me to admit that it was an attempt, not just to the world, but to myself. Like, that was the real reason behind all that. That was,
yeah.
And it's been tough. I'm like, you can probably hear it in my voice. It's not easy to discuss, but that's what happened. And the more I share it, the easier it is to talk about. And during that time and the time that followed, I had music, and it helped tremendously. It helped more than anything else. Without it, I would have felt completely hopeless, utterly alone. So I had and continue to have an amazing family, like so ridiculously loving. My mom, my siblings, all the extended family, they couldn't be more supportive. But what mental illness does, and I would say from my experience, particularly depression, it convinces you that you are broken and weak, and if you share this with anyone, they are going to judge you. They're going to hate you. They're going to shame you. They're going to, you know, all these nasty, nasty, nasty lies. So I kept it to myself.
Yeah.
And that keeping it from others prevented me from getting the help I needed, prevented me from therapy, prevented me from medication, prevented me from discussing all the other options out there, like how much of a difference exercise, nutrition can make, all these holistic things. I was completely oblivious to the arsenal, because the arsenal of metaphorical weapons I had to fight my illness, because I wouldn't admit I had it. So during that time, the one weapon, if I can keep using that metaphor, as violent as it is, the one weapon I thought I had was music. Like, I could put on my headphones, I could blast my stereo, and all of a sudden I didn't feel alone, because I had music. I had guys like Trent Reznor, guys like Jonathan Davis, guys like Corey Taylor writing songs, using language, using words that I didn't have myself. And it was able to crack open all the feelings, all the thoughts I had been bottling it up. And like, oh, the person who wrote this must feel what I feel, or at least something like it. Maybe I'm not alone, right? So those are the two primary things music does for me. And again, going by the many conversations I've had over these past 5 years, what it does for so many other people, it shows them that they're not alone, that they're not the only people feeling and thinking these things. And arguably more importantly, it gives them the key to unlock the gate that's been holding all this poison in. And now they can open it up and let it out. And suddenly they're healthier. Their mind isn't marinating in it anymore. Something I've used to describe it in the past is, without, you know, self-expression, whether it is music, whether it's writing, whether it's painting or any kind of visual art, right? We're able to vomit up that poison, right? And now it can't hurt us anymore because it's out of us. And not only that, we can mold it. We can mold it into a book. We can mold it into a song. We can mold it into a painting. And that becomes a tool for other people to use. That becomes an invitation for other people to do what we've done, to use their pain and create art. And it's like, it's this beautiful domino effect, right? So whether it's me being influenced by music and the musicians who made them, you being influenced by those same musicians or authors, anyone out there, like that's why self-expression is so important. It's the best thing there is, and I've done it all at this point. I already said the obvious things like therapy, like medication, exercise, nutrition. They've all helped me. I'll be clear about that, but none of them have helped me as much as music.
You know, that's definitely one of the coolest answers that we've had on the show so far, because when I was reading your biography, you know, I've seen the page before, but I went back to it. You know, I do my little bit of research before the guest comes on just to make sure I'm on point with everything and I know what I'm talking about a little bit. And the first thing that I thought of when I was reading what you guys are about, and I saw Jonathan Davis and Corey Taylor from Slipknot, who I think was on an episode of The Therapist on Viceland last season, which is a pretty cool episode. All I could think about was when I was going through an episode of Psychosis in 2008, you know, basically like the whole summer, I just, you know, I was reliving my life in my mind. I was scared. I was suicidal. Everything was coming to an end. But like every night at around the same time, I would just put the headphones on and whatever album I listened to for like an hour, that all went away. Was something that, like you said, when I had nobody, like I had, you know, one of the albums that I'm thinking of now is Silver Sun Pickups, Carnivus.
I love that album.
I felt like every word in that album was telling me, like was leading me in some way, you know, just not leading me out of the illness, but leading me to somewhere that I didn't have to be here for a little while. And It's just the way you tell your story is amazing. So I was going to ask you, what was your inspiration for You Rock? I think you basically already told us, but if you have any certain person or certain band that really influenced you to take this step and create the You Rock Foundation, what was it?
I can give you a very specific answer. Among the many things I've done for myself over the year, another huge part of it is self-development work. I think that's the simplest way to describe it. So as soon as I could read, I remember my dad handing me 3 books, and I had no interest in reading novels, but I remember this very clearly. He gave me a book by Deepak Chopra. Unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the book. I know it had a sword on the cover, and I think it had Merlin in the title. Of course, as a little kid, those are the things I remember.
Yeah.
The other two were Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman, and Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins. So I had no interest in this. I wanted to keep reading comics with my dad, which was, you know, his obnoxious love of Star Wars and comic books is something I have treasured and brought with me into adulthood. But I never read those books. I don't think I even looked at them after he showed me them. But then, of course, he died, and I had a renewed interest in all of his interests. So he left behind those and so much more in his vast library that I eventually started to read them. And it led me to doing courses, beyond, the like Tony Robbins epic seminars we've probably all seen clips of or documentaries of in this point, stuff that's more low key and closer to it, like an actual classroom environment. And I was doing, back in 2013, I was doing one of these programs. This one's called the Self-Expression and Leadership Program at a place called Landmark in New York City. They have locations all over the world, but this particular one was in New York City. And that program was built around a community project. And the community I was committed to transforming, to having a positive impact on, was the mental illness community. I wanted to create something that would have helped me when I was at my worst. So they asked you, what community do you want to have a positive impact on? And I immediately thought of those who are depressed, those who are suicidal. And then the follow-up question is, what communities can you use to make that positive impact as big as possible? So that's when the giant light bulb went off above my head. I'm like, oh, musicians, rock stars. I happened to work in the industry at that point. I was doing marketing and artist relations for a company that distributes musical equipment. And I had a lot of legit rock star connections. Some of them I can call friends. And I'm like, if music by itself is so powerful, if it was able to help me, how much more empowering would it be to hear the stories behind the music, to hear about the struggles that led to those people writing the lyrics that connected with me, that resonated with me, that were therapeutic for me? Like, how much more powerful would that be? Like, just think of your favorite artist and be like, imagine them looking in the camera. You're watching this video and suddenly you feel like you're in the room with them and you're having this really raw, intimate conversation about, I mean, I'm speechless. I've been doing this for 5 years and it's still like miraculous to me that I've been able to create exactly what I needed back then. And to speak, I name drop Corey Taylor and Jonathan Davis specifically of all the people we've talked to, because I was listening to their music like every day when I was at my worst. I have yet to talk to Trent Reznor, who's, I can like say, saved my life with The Downward Spiral and the subsequent albums that followed. But those two guys, I don't even know if they're aware of how much they've helped me or the others. So, I mean, the cool thing about this, or I should say one of the cool things, is I'm essentially my own target audience. I know exactly what people need because I have lived it, and I am still living it in a lot of ways. I feel like even though it's been 5 years, I feel like we're just getting started. Like we want to do so much more than what we're already doing. And I can talk about that later. I'm at the point where I feel like I'm rambling now.
No, that's fine. I'm just soaking it all in, because that's exactly why Hysteria Radio was made. So, to give you a little background of the show, I wrote during that summer when I was, having the psychosis, a couple suicide attempts, ended up moving to LA, and I wrote like 6 songs that were basically like my goodbye to everybody. It was like this, you know, psychedelic trip that I was on most of the time without even doing drugs. It was just all due to, you know, bipolar 1 and what they thought was schizoaffective at the time, but that was due to the meds that I was on. And one of the songs that I wrote was called Hysteria. And it's just like 7 minutes of confusion, basically. And then when I did this, I wanted to have the same conversations. I said, well, unfortunately, when I gave that song to people, they had no idea what it was about. But I wanted to get into, you know, more than just what you hear on the radio or what you see on MTV with, like, you know, the sensationalism of music. I wanted to get behind the song and behind the album, and not so much know, like, you know, I don't care what relationship the person was in or, you know, the TMZ aspect of it, but what feelings were you feeling? Like, what needed to come out? And how did this help you? Or even some cases, I think sometimes a song may hurt somebody, you know? And so when you were telling me about, you know, it was your dream to just talk to these people, because that's my same dream. I mean, I have a list of like, you know, 20 lead singers that like I can, or writers that I can't wait to talk to, because I want them to just share their story, because I think that the story behind the song or the album, you know, there's even more story behind it than there is, you know, that we've already seen.
Thank you for sharing that, number one. I didn't know all that. And this is something I find myself saying more often, especially when I'm speaking with like-minded people like yourself. It's doing stuff like this, me doing the U Rock Foundation, you doing Hysteria Radio, all the other people within our community and beyond it, anyone who is creating something based on what would have helped their younger self. That younger self could be decades ago, it could be yesterday, but anyone who's coming from that mindset, from that intention, this is the closest we get to time traveling. There are people out there, more than we'll ever know, people out there who are dealing with exactly what we dealt with and who need what we needed. Because we've lived it, we already know. We have wisdom they don't have yet, because they haven't, you know, been through the entire gauntlet. So let's keep them from struggling as long as we had to struggle. Let's keep them from some of the pitfalls. Let's do whatever we can, because we can see it coming. You know, our metaphorical eyesight is much better than all the younger versions of ourselves out there in the world. So let's use it for good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing, man. How can our listeners find you, and how can we get involved in any way to help you out?
Well, thanks for asking, number one. I appreciate that, Joe. Because it's like borderline to cliche to ask in the nonprofit world, but every little bit helps. For 4 out of the 5 years that U Rock existed, I've funded it with my paycheck. And I don't have a paycheck anymore. So the foundation really needs monetary help more than ever. So whether you want to donate your time or your money or your ideas, you think of something that we could do that would help, tell us. Regardless which of those areas your listeners feel like contributing to, the ones stop source is the website, which you already kindly mentioned. That's urockfoundation.org. You can write to info@urockfoundation.org. You can reach out to us on social media. We're on everything, but pay the most attention to the big 3, which are Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I don't know. Something I think is worth mentioning, despite how much I just said money helps, I would argue that time and energy are more valuable, because it takes a very special person to want to contribute to our organization or any organization like it. Think about how easy it is to give money nowadays, right? It's like a button click. You have your, you have all your info saved in your web browser. You have your credit card info there. You just hit a button. And while it is appreciated, while it is needed, I have so much respect for the people who volunteer their time, for the people who don't want to just push a button, for the people who want to like host events to raise money, or the people who want to volunteer at our tent for Warped Tour, or, you know, there's tons of stuff. There are almost endless ways, most of which I'm sure I'm oblivious to, because I'm like, I'm swimming in it right now. I have a very limited view. I'm distracted by the day-to-day responsibilities. So, and the biggest thing, arguably the best thing, is take UROC Foundation out of the equation and just be inspired by the video interviews we've collected from rock stars. The intention was always to go beyond the stage, to show people you don't need a stage to be a rock star. We have that same power of influence that these guys do. It's just on a smaller scale because we don't have the notoriety, right? No one knows me as much as Jonathan Davis or Corey Taylor, but I have that same power by you know, getting really raw, by agreeing to be intimate, agreeing to be vulnerable, stop, you know, putting up the facade of strength and pretending there's nothing wrong, to open up about everything that's wrong and showing people it's okay. Like, we all have that, and it can do that same awesome domino effect I was describing before. Like, if one listener is inspired by me or goes on to the YouTube channel and watches our videos, they're inspired by any of those, and it causes them to open up. I can virtually guarantee their opening up is going to allow someone else to open up. And we can't heal, we can't get the help we need until we open up, until we're admit to what we're dealing with, and until we share that with someone. Long-winded answer to your question, Joe. I was really thinking out loud there, but I, more than donations, more than volunteer work, I want that from what people are listening.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't think of a better way to end it than, if you feel compelled, just go to urockfoundation.org and enjoy the site, because it's there for you. And then if you feel compelled to, you know, send Joseph Pinola a message and get involved with these guys, because they're doing great things. And I have to say, like, this interview amazed me, because I feel like we share, you know, almost the same mission in this. So I want to let you know, if you ever want to come back on the show and promote anything, or if you have anybody associated with you that that you guys are doing something and you want to talk about it, I'd love to have you back on anytime.
I really appreciate that, and I'm sure I'll take you up on the offer eventually.
I want to thank you, Joseph Pinola, for Mental Health News Radio and Hysteria Radio. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro. Remember to keep the radio up to keep the hysteria down.